presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrill Hurst University, where adult students of all ages can earn college credit towards a bachelor's degree for knowledge gained outside the classroom with community service, seminars, and on-the-job training, and more. Listeners can learn more at the information session on Wednesday, September 19th at 6:30. Details at merrillhurst.edu. Also, thanks to the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
Welcome to Between the Covers. I'm your host this week, Leanne Kranz. Today, we highlight the first fiction release of local publisher Forest Avenue Press. The linked short story collection, A Simplified Map of the Real World, by Oregon writer and creative writing teacher Stephen Allred. I must say a few words about Forest Avenue Press for all the writers and readers out there. Forest Avenue Press is a regional press with a national reach. They publish Oregon writers with an emphasis on quiet, character-driven novels. They are very community-minded. They host local events and readings and produce statewide anthologies, mixing well-known with lesser-known writers. Their debut publication last year was an anthology titled Brave on the Page, Oregon Writers on Craft and the Creative Life. And it generated much local excitement and received national attention as well. It seemed like everywhere I turned around, people were telling me about that book. And now the publisher and founder, Laura Stanfill, launches their fiction line with A Simplified Map of the Real World. This linked short story collection captures the intertwined human experience of the multi-generational inhabitants of a small rural Oregon community, a place where people have known histories. Their loves and losses, tragedies and triumphs have witnesses. A place with a lingering memory of all the sad and beautiful stories that have happened there. The book is funny, touching, and has many deep thoughts about human nature, family, community, and this life on earth. Our guest in studio this morning is author Stephen Allred. He's a local writer and creative writing teacher who presides with his co-teacher, Joanna Rose, at the Pinewood Table, a weekly critique group for story writers. His short stories have appeared in numerous publications in the U.S. and the U.K., and he was nominated for a Pushcart Prize in 2007. A Simplified Map of the Real World is his first published short story collection. Welcome, Stephen Allred.
Thank you, Leanne. I'm so excited to be here at KBOO and with you.
Congratulations on your debut.
I'm very excited.
Your book, A Simplified Map of the Real World, takes place in a fictional town of Renata, Oregon, which bears a striking resemblance to Estacada, near where you live. And I must say, you've created a very colorful cast of characters. Made me wonder, are your neighbors really that crazy?
Well, no, it's not so much the case that I would pick out one of my neighbors and think I could write a story about them. It's more the case that... how do I put this? I really work from... I think of myself more as a character actor, as a writer. Mm-hmm. So the characters come from inside of me, and I manifest them out into the world. pretty much through the force of my own imagination. But they're not meant as portraits of my neighbors. On the other hand, now that the book is out in the world, it belongs to anybody who reads it. So if someone sees themselves in one of those characters, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful, because your react, that's what I want. I want you to think and feel and react to these people. These characters are pretty much as real to me as anybody I know in the real world.
Yeah, you wrote very warmly about them.
I love them.
Yeah.
Even the ones I don't like.
So for those out there who haven't read the book yet, can you kind of set the scene for us, Renata and its inhabitants?
Well, Renata's a small town that does bear a certain physical resemblance to Estacada. I live near there. But it's really a town of my imagination. And maybe a way to understand how I work would be, I could tell you this kind of how I came to the opening story. The opening story is called His Ticky Little Mind. So this is kind of about my process and how I operate as a writer. I was at a moment in my writing life when I was between projects. I was working on short stories. I'm kind of looking for what's the next story. I had left my home, was driving down the road towards Portland, and I noticed a couple miles from home that one of my neighbors had cut down a large tree in their front yard, and they had left a 12-foot tall stump in their front yard, which I thought was really weird and unusual. And so I took note of that, and then just as I passed the stump, an oncoming car passed. It was a pickup truck. And on the side of the truck, it was for a business, was the name Volpe, V-O-L-P-E. And I just thought, okay, somebody named Volpe cut down this tree. That's where I'm going to start. And that's literally how I started that story. I began to imagine what would happen if somebody did such an odd thing as cut down a tree in that particular way, and what would the neighbors think? And that led me to the neighbor across the street, and from there the story began to unfold.
Yes, Mike Volpe appears in several of these linked short stories.
He's a pretty important character in the collection. He's the guy we love to hate.
Yes.
He's got issues. He's a certain kind of guy. And he's a kind of guy that I've met over the course of my life. He's got very strong opinions about how the world is. He's kind of rigid. He's one of these guys who thinks that it's all about the breeding, and he's a cattle breeder. But he approaches everything and everyone in his life as if they're a breed of cattle that he wants to improve.
Yeah, as a woman, it was very hard to spend time in his mind sometimes.
Yeah.
He talked about us. He rated us like meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. He does do that. He does not necessarily represent my own views.
Thank you.
I hope that comes through.
Yes, it does. And it made me really feel for his son.
Yeah.
He has two sons, one the golden boy,
right,
and one is so much of an anti-golden boy that he paints himself silver in his performance art.
Yeah.
It really made me sympathize with the non-golden boy son.
Yeah.
Ray.
Well, and he gets his own story.
Yep.
It's called The Painted Man. And I think we've probably all seen these guys. They're all over the country, I think. But it's a kind of street performance art that you see where someone has painted themselves all one color. Typically silver is what I've seen here in Portland. And then they'll hold a pose for a while, or, you know, they play with that crystal ball kind of thing. And I just saw the guy down at Saturday Market on Saturday. there was another thing, you know, I passed by one of these guys a few years ago and I thought, huh, what if he was Mike Volpe's son? What would that be like?
Yeah. Perfect way to drive Mike Volpe crazy.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
Well, you know, I mentioned some of the themes in the introduction, love and loss, and you write beautifully about the dynamics between family members.
Yeah.
And I thought that in the story, The Painted Man, from the viewpoint of the son, Ray, that there were just such beautiful writing in that piece
about
that relationship. And I don't want to give too much away about it, but there were just some... Any of you children out there with those sort of issues, I think you'll find that chapter very meaningful.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And that story, they're all very dear to my heart, but that's one of the longer stories, and I really spent a long time with those characters in that story, and hopefully gave you a pretty full portrait of how that family worked, mm-hmm. certainly from the younger son's point of view. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for him. He has a difficult father. He has a father who thinks he's a difficult son. Those are hard emotional truths to live through and work with, to process, within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I hope that I was getting at some of that difficulty and with some love for everybody involved. Even though Mike Volp is kind of an SOB, I do really love him as a character. He provided
he's very
so,
human.
Yeah, he's a very human guy. Mm-hmm. And that's something I try to bring to my writing is a roundedness to my characters. Mm-hmm. Now, there's one story where I really went off the reservation in terms of rounded characters. So I have a story that's very pro-choice. It's called Trish the Freakin' Dish, and it's a little more satirical than anything else in the collection. So when I was doing satire, I gave myself permission to be a little more two-dimensional in terms of one of the characters. But I was really angry when I wrote that story, because I knew going in I was going to write a story about an abortion. And so I started doing some research online, and I ran across a website that just flipped me out. It was very extreme on the anti-choice side of that debate, and full of the kind of lies and distortions that we saw in the last election cycle from certain candidates. And it just set me off, and I wanted to answer that. And so that was what I did in that story.
Yeah, Renata is like a little microcosm of our country right now, and it had neighbors pitted against neighbors. And,
yes.
And it just was a very, it really underscored the difficulty of that issue and how we are all dealing with it and trying to figure it out. And
yeah. Well, and that divide in the town of Renata is very true to the real town of Estacada. I think a lot of people in Portland, if you haven't been out there, you might think it's just all loggers and rednecks. That's not the case at all. It's a much more complicated place than that. There's a very vibrant arts community out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of art and artists. There's theater. There's just a lot going on. We're not all about tweakers and bodies you find out in the woods. That's really not what Estacada's like.
That I was really struck by that. You're right. It was not the monoculture we might feel. There's a lot of diversity.
Yes.
For instance, continuing on with how I think you really did beautiful writing about family tensions and connections, there's a storyline about a very religious Mormon LDS family in Estacada, and then the couple of the children of that extended family trying to figure out where they fit into the world. That was
And you're referring to the title story, A Simplified Map of the Real World, and then the story that follows it, which is called Vortex, which is about the famous state-sponsored rock festival at MacIver Park in 1970, the only state-sponsored rock festival in the history of the world, I believe, certainly in the history of the United States. And that pair of stories is one of the hearts of this collection. I think the Volp stories are another kind of heart place for it. But the two stories about Lenny and his nephew Cal, they get at that family dynamic. They get at kind of the difficulty of finding one's place in that kind of family if you don't exactly fit in. And I hope that I did justice to those characters.
Yes, you mentioned Vortex. I have to say that was my favorite story.
Oh, good.
Do you mind telling listeners about the actual event and then how you played with that?
Well, it took place in 1970. I used as a resource a book by Matt Love called Vortex, which is just a super book about this event. Really excellent. What was going on was, 1970, the American Legion was having its annual convention in Portland. This is 2 years after the riots in Chicago at the Democratic Convention. It's after Kent State. The country is in a state of turmoil politically. And the SDS, the Students for a Democratic Society, had put it out in every underground newspaper in America. Come to Portland. Confront the American Legion. And really what they were after was a massive demonstration in the streets. They really wanted it to turn violent. They wanted to get even. They felt that there was a blood debt to repay for Chicago and for Kent State, and they were all about it. Now, not everybody in the counterculture here in Portland wanted that kind of event to happen. And so a faction broke off and went to the governor's office in Salem without an appointment. Three or four hippies who drove down and stopped and had a beer on the way down. And they talked their way into the chief of staff, and he took the proposal to the governor. And what they wanted to do was provide an alternative. They called it a festival of life, Vortex, a festival of life. They, rather than confront and get violent in the streets, they wanted to show peace, love, understanding, that the hippies had another way of approaching life. And so they just wanted to put on this festival at McIver Park and provide an alternative. The governor was advised by his staff that this was the worst thing he could do. He was going into an election. The governor, Tom McCall, took his own counsel and told his staff, you know what, we're doing this. Make it happen. And they did. The staff gave this ragtag bunch of hippies enough support to put on a festival that drew, by some estimates, 100,000 people over 3 days. It was pretty amazing. And the local people in Estacada were terrified. They thought, you know, they'd heard about Woodstock. They'd heard things like that the milk from the cows tasted like patchouli oil after Woodstock. They thought hippies were going to raid their gardens and steal their tomatoes, and they were going to guard those tomatoes with shotguns if they had to. In fact, it was entirely nonviolent and peaceful. It was quite a party. I've interviewed people who were there, and basically none of them remember much of it. So there was a lot of stuff going on there. A lot of drinking, a lot of probably psychedelics and certainly marijuana going on. But they were having a good time, and they weren't breaking windows in downtown Portland.
And some of my favorite characters from the Linked short story collection, they have some beautiful scenes in that story. Lenny, yeah. I loved Lenny.
Yeah.
He's a gay man back in the 70s, and it was so sad to see that even among this counterculture, emerging free counterculture, he was still had to remain, for his own safety, very much in his own shell.
1970 is just a few months after the Stonewall riots. Mm-hmm. I believe that's May 69. It's really at the very, very dawn of gay liberation. And the counterculture did not, at that point in time, they weren't particularly gay friendly. They were just like the rest of the mm-hmm. population. I think they were probably more open to considering something new, but it really wasn't part of the culture until gay liberation made it a part of the culture. And mm-hmm. and at the point the story takes place, that hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm. You even get into the head of the vice president in that story, Spiro Agnew.
Spiro T. Agnew, yes.
That was really entertaining, his diabolical thoughts.
Yes. Of course, I lived through the Nixon years, and I lived through Spiro Agnew, who was kind of Nixon's hatchet man. And I thought it was just a really great way to stretch myself as a writer to try and get inside his head. And so I did some research on him, and I put him in the story.
It was so entertaining to witness his, you know, his ideas of his future, what's to come when Nixon gets out of the way. And it was just knowing the future I was cracking up.
Yeah. Because we know now, of course, that his political career fizzled out in a very dramatic way, as did Nixon's. Mm-hmm. But at the time the story takes place, of course, he doesn't know that.
We're speaking with Oregon author Stephen Allred, talking about his brand new linked short story collection, A Simplified Map of the Real World, that officially launches on the 12th of September, but you can find it in local booksellers now, I understand.
It's now available, yes. It's
published by Forest Avenue Press.
We're launching at Powell's a week from tonight on September 12th at 7:30. So I'd love to have everybody come down. I'm going to read. I'm going to sign books. I'm going to talk a little bit about this writing community that I'm a part of that is so important to me.
And we'll announce that date again at the end of the show with a few others in town. Stephen Allred, would you read for us this
morning? I would
morning?
Love to read.
Read us something. Thank
it's
you.
It's one of my favorite things to do is read aloud.
And I love to listen.
So this is from a story that's late in the collection. The story is called Conflations of a Hard-Headed Yankee. And it's about a widower trying to find his way after his wife has died. In this passage here, he's remembering his wife. He missed Evelyn. There was no denying it. The loss was sharpest when a great blue heron stood on the shore of the pond at the edge of their woods looking for fish, or when a coyote trotted across the yard just after sunrise, or when the deer browsed by in the evening. They both loved living in the country, loved the wildlife and the garden and the quiet, and this was the life they shared for better than four decades. Most days now, that note of loss was just one bird call in a morning full of birdsong. Theirs had been a marriage of opposites. Everyone said so. Evelyn was the free spirit, the dancer, the one who did the talking for both of them when they were out with friends or people from the schools. Vern was her hard-headed Yankee, the one who needed proof rather than faith, the one who could learn the steps, but who could never really dance the foxtrot. Salsa dancing, one of Evelyn's passions for a time, was beyond him. He gave up after two lessons, saying he could never move his hips that way in front of other people. What they shared was the outdoors, the garden, the wildlife, hiking and camping. Vern knew the names of everything, plants, birds, even the rocks were named things for him. He could name every flower they saw on a hike up to the top of Dog Mountain, or name the stars in the night sky. He made her a devotee of field guides, of life lists, of hiking the same forest trail in different seasons.
That was Stephen Allred reading from his new link short story collection, A Simplified Map of the Real World, out now by Forest Avenue Press. I love that particular passage because it just conveys how you incorporate the natural, regional natural settings of our lovely state, as well as the deep interiors of your characters.
Certainly one of the taproots of this collection is love of place. Mm-hmm. And so I live out there, not too far from McIver Park, not too far from Estacada. I live on some acreage. That description is pretty close to my house. And it gives me a sense of peace, and I think it helps me find the quiet place I need to write from.
One of the characters you touch on in that piece, Evelyn.
Yes.
If I may, without giving too much away, I will say this, that we hear not only from historical characters of different generations, but we hear from those who've passed on as well.
Yes.
It was a really neat feeling to believe that our loved ones are still looking out for us, and if they need to make an appearance to give us a message, they just might.
Well, I'll let this out. I don't think it's giving away too much. There are a couple of ghosts in the collection. And that was one of the writing challenges that I took up, was I just wanted to see how I would handle a ghost in a story. Vern, the voice I just read from, he doesn't believe in ghosts. He's a high school science teacher. He believes in science and rationality. And yet he's confronted with a ghost. And what is he going to do with that?
I'm haunted by one of the characters who returns, Sadie Gloss.
Yes.
That character just lives with me now.
Yeah.
Do you want to quickly characterize her?
Well, that's from a story called As Men Will Do Unto the Least Among Us, a story with a kind of biblical feel to the title. And it's the one story that's set furthest back in time, so it takes place in 1902. Sadie Gloss is a Native American woman, a mixed heritage, actually, and she figures pretty prominently in that story, and then she appears in one or two others. You have to be paying attention to catch her on one of those occasions. You might miss her. It's very subtle. But that story, in part, came from a couple of things. I wanted to explore what Mike Volpe's ancestors might have been like. I had read, I live not too far from the Springwater Grange, and granges are important in rural America still to this day. And the Springwater Grange had a 100-year celebration a few years ago. Somebody from the Grange wrote a history of the Grange and produced this little pamphlet. And in that pamphlet was a brief description of a fire that had raged in 1902 through that whole area. And I was especially struck by one line in this description, which said that the fire, which took place in September when the grass was dry, followed the tall grass up the fence lines, and that's how it spread. And so the visual of that, that haunted me. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, that's an amazing image. And I started with that image, the idea about Volpe's grandparents, and then one other thing, which was I had done some reading about old-time cemeteries, and I had, through that, became aware that there was a real prejudice against burying Native Americans in consecrated ground in Christian cemeteries. So I wanted to explore that.
I loved her. We've been speaking with Stephen Allred, the author of the debut Link short story collection, A Simplified Map of the Real World, out now by Forest Avenue Press. The official launch is next Thursday. Stephen, can you give us your local dates if folks want to come out and see you?
Yeah, so we'll be at Powell's a week from tonight. So that's September 12th at 7:30 p.m. That's the official launch. I'm at Annie Bloom's in Multnomah Village, October 14th at 7 p.m. I'm at Broadway Books on Northeast Broadway on November 7th at 7 p.m. with another writer, local writer, Natalie Serber, who's written her book is a linked collection of short stories, quite a wonderful book, and it's called Shout Her Lovely Name. So we'll be together there.
And where can folks buy your book in town?
You can get it at Powell's. You can get it at Annie Bloom's, Broadway Books. We're getting out to all the independent bookstores. We'll have it at St. John's Booksellers soon if it's not there already. You can buy it at Amazon. You can go to my website, which is stephenallred.com, and you have to spell Stephen right. That's S-T-E-V-A-N, the way my mom spelled it, stephenallred.com. Or you can go to forestavenuepress.com. And you can find, I have other appearances that are listed at those places, especially the Forest Avenue Press website.
Well, thank you, Stephen Allred, and congratulations on this debut release for you. I enjoyed it very much.
Well, thank you, Leanne. This has been a pleasure for me.
And thank you, Laura Stanfill at Forest Avenue Press. And thank you all for listening to Between the Covers. I'm Leanne Kranz, and up next, Black Book Talk.
Wednesdays in Portland are a little more festive these days, thanks to Creative Collaborations and Hump Day PDX. Hump Day PDX is a street festival in Southeast Portland, featuring the live music and art exhibits of creative entrepreneurs who are living on the streets. There are also family activities to enjoy, food to eat, and a beer garden for drink, all organized by Creative Collaborations in support of struggling artists and in an effort to stimulate the local neighborhood economy. The next Hump Day PDX is September 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Southeast 9th and Belmont in Portland. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The KBOO Board of Directors elections are underway. KBOO members can vote for up to four candidates. Ballots were mailed in mid-August. If you think you are a KBOO member and have not received a ballot, email membership director Andrew Geller at membership@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 207. Non-members can join KBOO and receive a ballot to vote. Just go to kboo.fm and click donate on the top right-hand corner. The annual meeting is Sunday, September 15th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Matt Dishman Community Center at 77 Northeast Knott Street in Portland. You can mail back your ballot or bring it to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Ballots must be postmarked by September 10th or cast at the annual meeting by 2:40 p.m. to count. Get informed, get involved, and vote. Thanks.
Don't know the right words to say, I'm not magic. Don't hold the world in my hands. Wish I could fly through the air like a hero. But I'm just someone who loves you, that's all I am. Wish I could take you away to a palace, make you the queen of the land, all the riches and gold, I don't have them. I'm just someone who loves you, that's all I am. Love that is pure,